Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Leviathan, Paul Stack. I have a book in my hands. The Greatest Untold Story of the Civil War. And this is a story that you just can't believe sometimes, but then you say, look, shortly after the attack on Fort Sumter, General Winfield Scott advised a military strategy, actually devised it, that became, is known as one that can never be duplicated. And I would like to have you meet a very special author, Paul Stack. And this is a thick book, and I have not read all of it yet, but I want to tell you something right now. It's one that must be read. Paul, good morning, good morning, good morning.
Good morning, Brad. Thank you for having me.
Well, no, never mind. Thank you for being here. This is, you know, when you think of something like this, the greatest untold story of the Civil War, the first thing that I wanted to ask you, how in the God's name did you find out that this was it?
It's a strange story, Brad, but I'll give it to you as best I can. Back in 2000, my wife bought a discarded book from a library for a quarter. It was called The Great Iron Ship, and it was a popular history of a ship called the Great Eastern. And it was very interesting. It had nothing to do with what I wrote about, but it was an interesting book. And so I started looking at other things relating to the Great Eastern. I would go on internet auctions, and I would buy old newspaper articles and pictures and so forth. And one day I came across a shell, a carved shell, and it was a troca shell. It's built like almost like a child's stacking toy. And at the lowest level of the shell is a profile of the ship, and it says the Great Eastern, 24,500 tons. Right above it is an engraving of a gate next to a windswept tree. It says the tomb of A. Lincoln, President of U.S.
What?
Exactly. I looked at that and said, whoa. Now, I live in Illinois, and I know Lincoln's background because I'm an Illinois lawyer, and we all have read about Lincoln heavily. I've never heard of the Great Eastern. I bought the shell, and I talked to people who were experts in Lincoln and said, have you ever heard of the Great Eastern? Have you ever heard of anything? Nothing. Lincoln never saw it, never wrote about it, never thought about it. And so the question is, why are these two things on the shell? And the tomb that they show is a temporary tomb that he was put into. So this shell was carved shortly after he was buried, I'm guessing about 1866 or 1867. When I got it, there was also a third symbol on it that I didn't see in the internet ad. And it's crossed wings. It's right above the tomb. And that's all. I looked at that shell with a magnifying glass, see if there's anything else I could find. There wasn't. But I was convinced at that point that there was some kind of event or some kind of story to that shell. Now, my background, as I said, is a lawyer. For a long while, I was an assistant U.S. attorney in Chicago. So we were all trained to basically how to investigate conspiracies and so forth. And I used some of that, and I got started on it. What I didn't realize, it was going to take me 15 years to dig it all out.
Yeah.
I've done research in London. I've done research in New York. I've done research in Ohio. I've done research in New Orleans, trying to trace who these people are that were involved. I've hired genealogists and put all this together. And one of the things I have done, I have a website. It's September1861.com, because that's the important period of time. September1861.com.
1861.com.
Right. And that has a lot of pictures of the ship, and it has pictures of the shell. But what it also has is it has all of my source documents. All of my source documents were typed up and put in a chronology. And there's thousands of them. The chronology is about, single-spaced, is about 1,200 pages long. Now, this is something I doubt most readers will want to spend time going through, but it's there for historians because much of this has never been seen before. And so I ended up convinced as to what happened about 6 years ago and said, okay, how do I get this out? And the answer was, I have to write a book. I have to tell the story of it. And that's what I've done. And you're right, it is a thick book. It's a fairly complicated story. It covers a number of years. The ship itself is astounding. I have told people that, truthfully, that if the ship were in existence today, it would be the biggest ship in the United States Navy, except for our aircraft carriers.
Really?
It was launched in 1858. Yeah, it was absolutely enormous. And it was also almost cursed. It was so gigantic when it was built and it worked on it that it just was ending up killing people left and right. In fact, the singer Sting did a song about 5 years ago, which is on YouTube, called The Ballad of the Great Eastern. And in it, he goes through all of the disastrous things that happened to the ship. And it's a very dark song. That was one of the reasons I believe the name was changed. It was christened the Leviathan initially. Leviathan is a biblical sea monster where it's associated with chaos and evil. And I think they decided that having a ship named after a biblical sea monster was not probably the best marketing you could do. So they then changed the name to the Great Eastern. But if you look at the pictures of this thing, the lead picture of it on that website shows the ship coming toward you. It's a contemporary rendering. The anchors are 4 stories tall.
Wow.
Yeah, this thing, it was designed to carry all of the coal it needed to go around the world without refueling. And it had 3 times the coal-carrying capacity of the Titanic. It's just everything about this thing is just astounding in terms of its size, in terms of its construction. It wasn't designed as a military weapon, but the Scientific American correctly said that this ship could mow down any ship in the world, one right after another, without firing a shot. It was almost 7 stories tall coming out of the water, and it had a giant armored bow. It was all iron.
How did Lincoln, was that ever discovered, how Lincoln got involved?
Yes. He comes involved at the end of the story. The clue is the crossed wings at the top of the shell.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't figure out what that was. And finally, when the story was all over, I looked again and started thinking about it, and I realized what it was. On tombstones during that period of time, quite a few of them have symbols of crossed wings, and they indicate souls going up to heaven. And as I looked at it, in the story, I'm convinced there was a man who died stopping the ship from breaking the blockade. And we don't know who that man's name is. We really don't know much about him, but I created him as a character. I know who else was on board the ship. These are real people.
Wow.
And I think the shell celebrates the death of 2 people, one who was fighting to save the Union, one who was going to stop the ship from breaking the blockade. And I think this person's motivation was his concern that if the ship broke the blockade, slavery would continue for years in the future.
So this is a fabulous, fabulous story.
It was so hard to write.
I don't know how you. I've got the book right here now, and I've been looking at it. I don't know how you wrote it.
Well,
I mean, seriously, I'm not. I mean, it is just incredible.
Well, it was a lot of nights, and fortunately, I have an understanding wife, and part of the thing. I mean, I don't golf or do stuff like that. But one of the things I just have fun doing. I love doing research. I had some legal work in London, and when I would go over, I would take a couple extra days, and I'd go to the British Library in Colindale, which had all their newspapers, and I would sit there, and I would go through their newspapers, and I was just enjoying myself. trying to piece together. This is exactly what it is. It's piecing together a conspiracy when there's nobody alive to tell you. You have to put it together from documents and letters and dates and ship registries and so forth. It's got some fascinating people. The most prominent person in the book is Seward, Lincoln's Secretary of State.
Yes, that's right.
And the on the Confederate side, there's a man named Dudley Mann, who was formerly the Assistant Secretary of State, but who basically got pushed out of the federal government for being pro-South. And he then became the Confederate ambassador, or if you will, Confederate commissioner to England. And he had followed this ship for a long time. His dream, when the ship was first built, he used to go out and visit it when it was being built. His dream was to have the ship go directly from England to the Chesapeake Bay and bypass New York and all the rest of these places to basically give the South economic independence from the North. And he published a journal on that. He published a pamphlet that was read throughout the South. And that was his goal, and that was upset by the war. I think if they had held off Fort Sumter for 3 or 4 months, there's, I think, a reasonable chance he would have been able to achieve British recognition of the Confederacy. But when he was over there, he was almost on the verge of doing that. They opened fire on Fort Sumter, and the British said, no, we don't want to get involved in a fighting war. And they backed off for a while. So the idea was to use this to break the blockade. It would have resulted in the ship, it would have resulted in the British recognizing the Confederacy. That's what was on stake. It was in September of 1861. This ship was in the North Atlantic, going full steam, and it was headed toward, not New York, where that was its manifest, it was headed toward the South, and I believe it was headed for Port Royal, South Carolina.
Yeah. Paul, I'll tell you something right now, just listening to you, and just wondering how you ever got the courage in a way to write this book. Donna Banks, who is my producer on the radio, I had this on my desk the other morning, and she said to me that she was trying to get you, and I guess couldn't reach you at first. I don't know the whole story. However, it was on my desk this morning, and this is why I wanted to have you on the program. And evidently, she was trying several times to get you. But this is an incredible story. What has the reaction been to you from people that have seen this?
Just came out a couple weeks ago, Brad, and so it's the people are just beginning to learn of it. And
I can't wait to read it.
Thank you. I think you're gonna find it interesting. That's the one thing that I've heard from people who are reading it. It's like, wow, did I learn a lot? But also, it's a story of real courage. I mean, we talk about the Civil War being fought, but you know, we have the soldiers and the guys in the uniform. But this was espionage. Seward was not in uniform. Seward's people were basically civilians. And that's why this story has never been told. They could never tell this story. If they had disclosed the story after the event, there would had to have been a war between us and the United Kingdom.
Wow.
Because the United Kingdom would not have put up with it for a moment if they had known what had happened. You know, the largest ship in the world, flying under a British flag. I don't think the British government knew about that. I think that was done strictly between the owners of the ship and the Confederacy. But the ship never made it. The ship was about 2 days out from Ireland when something happened on it, and that's when the one person aboard the ship died. And that's why the shell commemorates the death of Lincoln and the death of this person. Now, who carved that shell? I don't know. I don't think we'll ever know that. The shell was purchased by me from a dealer in Australia. And I wrote to the dealer and said, what do you know of the shell? And he said, I know nothing other than I had secondhand information.
It's just a regular shell.
Well, it's a seashell.
A seashell. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Cone. Yeah. It's actually a beautiful thing because it's polished. It's almost like mother of pearl. And the engraving is very professional. This is not some guy with a Barlow knife cutting it. This is professional engraving. Somebody hired somebody to do this. The rendering of the Great Eastern looks like it was copied from an old Currier and Ives print. The rendering of the tomb, I can't locate. I don't know where that came from, and I'm trying to work with the folks here in Springfield where the tomb is located to see what earlier photographs they have of it.
Well,
but as I said, what started my interest. Why would a ship launched in London in 1858?
I know.
And Lincoln's tomb in Springfield, Illinois, be on the shell. And either there was no relation between the two, in which case somebody just decided to put a couple of symbols on there, or this was.
But doesn't it make you wonder? Doesn't it make you wonder if Lincoln himself didn't have something to do with this?
He would. I doubt he would have had it at the time. He may have found out about it after the fact. Seward was doing everything by. This was early on in the war. Lincoln was overwhelmed, and he basically left all of the foreign relations and everything to Seward. And Seward was really a man of action. I mean, this guy was fearless, and he was going to do whatever he needed to be done, however it needed to be done, to keep the Union together. And so, I'm certain Lincoln did not know at the time, and I'm certain Lincoln would not have approved it if he had known at the time. He may have found out afterwards. I don't know. I just don't know. The only thing I could think of is there is one strange story Grant was talking to Lincoln, and Grant was very concerned because he hadn't heard from General Sherman. Sherman was marching through Georgia. And Lincoln said that he had the same dream over and over again, and it was a singular ship heading toward an unknown shore. And every time he had that dream, there was a Union victory. And
wow.
I thought at the time,
wow,
that's an odd dream for a president who's never seen the ocean. I mean, Lincoln had never been on a ship. He'd been on the Mississippi River, but not an unknown ship. And I thought that was an odd dream to have. But that's it. I don't have any other information or any other suggestion that Lincoln was aware of it before or after. I think there was a
little.
Can you
hold on for
sure.
just a moment? Because I do want to get a couple of more questions, and I do want to
sure.
ask you some things. So thank you so much. Just for a few minutes. Thank you. The Leviathan, the greatest untold story of the Civil War, just written. And I have Paul Stack with me, who labored. I mean, when he's told me this story and how one thing led to another, it's just incredible. And it'll be a bestseller. You wait and see.
Well, thank you. I hope so.
You know, when I think of Paul, some of the things in this book, and what you have described, and I don't know why, since I've talked with you, that I have a feeling that something with Lincoln is involved with this. Maybe I'm wrong. But there's something there, and I think you'll find out.
Well, I could. You know, one of the things that happens is when you get a story like this out, stuff starts coming out of attics and so forth. One of the reasons the story took so long to put together was that the universities had a lot of correspondence in archives. And these are not from Lincoln and Seward. These are from minor figures. These are smaller figures in the area, but families would collect all the correspondence, and then we'd give them to universities, and they put them on archives. And what happened was, in the last 4 or 5 years, a lot of these universities started putting indexes of all these documents on the Internet, which allowed me to go and locate them, almost sort of rummage through their attic. And then when I get the document from them, then I would type it and put it into my chronology and see where it fit in. And so I think more and more documents are going to come out. about this. Regarding Lincoln, boy, I tell you, they really picked Lincoln's stuff pretty clear. I mean, anything that had any connection to Lincoln is enormously valuable, and it gets brought up.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, but I think that minor figures, like his secretaries and so forth, that may come up. But Seward did all sorts of stuff without telling Lincoln. One of my favorite stories there is that Seward heard that the Confederacy was going to try to put people in to disrupt the counting of votes at the Electoral College. At that time, the Electoral College actually met in a House of Congress where they counted the votes. And so
Wow. What
they were going to do is try to upset the presidential election by having people come in and basically break up the election of the Electoral College. And Seward hears about this, so he goes and he hires a bunch of thugs. And he tells them, if there's anybody tries to break up the thing, deal with them. Well, they didn't. The thugs are all sitting there in the visitor center waiting for trouble, and it never happened. That's kind of the way Seward operated. He did things on his own. He felt he was more qualified than Lincoln to be president. He was the main person competing with Lincoln for the Republican nomination. But at the same time, he was going to do everything he could to help Lincoln and get him in power.
Wow.
And the two ultimately became very, very close.
You know, Paul, this has really been an honor to have you with me, to do something like this with a book. I can't wait until I start really getting into this, and I think that's going to be the reaction that you're going to find with other people around this country once they get a hold of the greatest untold story of the Civil War. I just believe that.
Well, thank you, Brad. I appreciate that. The website is the place to go, because the website, it's September1861.com. It's free. You don't have to log in. There's no cookies. There's anything. It's basically complimentary to the book. But you see the pictures. You see the documents. You see a lot of what is there. It's very graphical. And then if you want to follow through, then it gives you a link to buy the book.
That's let me just thank you, Paul. And I'm right down. We went right down to the end of the program. But I will certainly be in touch with you to talk again. And I hope that you will be in touch with me.
I will, Brad.
This is fascinating. I love books like this anyway, and of course Lincoln, and I'm just going to keep that in me, that something is going to happen that's going to include Abraham Lincoln. And again, I just want to say to you, thank you so much for giving this book so that we can look at it and kind of get into it. And I think that, as I said earlier, a few minutes ago, I think this is going to be the reaction that you're going to get from others around the country that are in the business that we are in as broadcasters. So thank you, and God bless you.
Brad, thank you very much for having me. Have a good day.
You too, sir. Thank you.